610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitua.
There we go. That's right. In the Loop. It would help if I turned this thing on, huh? In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez. You got Figgy Fig. You got myself, Reginald Atitula, hanging out with you on this Wednesday. The Texans are on the field practicing. Not at NRG Stadium. They're over at the training fields where they typically practice. We are at NRG Stadium.
I just peeped over there, by the way. I didn't see much.
Okay.
It's kind of far away from where we are.
Why don't you take the binoculars?
Oh.
See?
That's right.
Gotta use your noggin, man. But, I mean, there's people down on the ground, obviously, reporting as they always do. I mentioned that Damian Pierce is at practice. Apparently, does not have his helmet, is not actively practicing in that way. So that is interesting. Still, so Damian Pierce is watching practice, even though he's at practice.
But not participating. Okay.
That is what we've seen thus far. Laramie Tunsil, we mentioned, isn't practicing. No Joe Mixon spotted out there, it seems like. So that's the weird thing of this, is that you go from Joe Mixon.
Don't quite know what to make of that.
Last week, and all of a sudden he pops up on Friday practicing, and we're like, oh, does that mean he'll play? The answer was no in that regard.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, cool. At least it feels like he is, you know, situated well to then maybe come through for the Bills game, and the first opportunity to practice, he's not practicing. I don't know what to make of that just yet.
Yeah. You know what I wish we could do?
What's that?
Not talk about the offensive line.
Agreed.
You know, it's the same in radio as in a game. You know, if you don't mention his name, he's probably doing his job, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in life that's just like, no news is good news, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't hear about it, that these things are going well, right?
Yeah.
And the offensive line tends to be one of those things where if you don't think about how well they're doing, oftentimes they're doing pretty well. But unfortunately for this, that's been front and center in our perspective.
And it is right now. Because finally came across the PFF grades, and of course you always qualify that, you know, because PFF, especially on the offensive line, the grades can be somewhat deceptive.
Yeah, it's a real subjective grading situation. So
you don't know, was he supposed to be there? Should he have had? Did he miss an assignment by blocking that guy? Sometimes you're supposed to just chip him and move on to the next. So it's very, very, you know, arbitrary from guys that know football. I mean, they're very good. PFF grades generally are a good gauge. But in the offensive line in particular, you don't know the blocking assignment. I mean, you can guess at it, but you don't know exactly what it was. But that said, I feel like we need to talk about the offensive line today. And the reason is...
Why particularly? I mean, we can always talk about the offensive line.
That's what I'm saying. I want to have a day where we don't have to.
But why particularly are we having to talk about it today?
Because those grades came out for the first 4 weeks of the season, And I looked at them, and so the general consensus, even D'Amico said... yesterday, I believe, day before yesterday, Monday, he thought the line improved, showed some improvement, and I'm not going to say he's wrong. He knows more in football than I do, but there were still some sort of questions about some of the things they were doing. And so I'll go through the grades, and you tell me what stands out to you.
Okay.
But then there are some grades they had, or I guess they counted hurries and pressures. All right, but just the overall offensive line grade. Your leader with the highest grade through 4 weeks is one Titus Howard with a grade of 69.
Nice.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Second is the guy that I've been very, very high on since I started seeing him in training camp at 68.1, and that's Juice Scruggs.
That makes sense.
That, like, feels right.
Those two guys feel like they're the ones that have been the least affected by the negativity when it comes to offensive line play. And that is not to say they have been perfect. There have definitely been instances where I'm like, ooh, okay, this needs to be better. But those are the two guys that you definitely look at and you go, yeah, they've been relatively heavy on the relatively.
And then when I saw this number, it was actually qualified with they do take away, PFF does take into account penalties. And so you start to think, okay, well, if it weren't for the penalties, Laramie Tunsil's grade of 64.8 would probably be a lot better. But you can't say if it weren't for the penalties.
Right, and that's the thing we're talking about with Laramie Tunsil, right? We have our – we can definitely pick nits, and maybe it's more than picking nits about maybe not finishing in the run game and those types of things. We know he can be a good pass blocker, but the problem is all of that – talent then comes with I can use this word, admittedly boneheaded kind of mistakes that you get, especially penalty wise, and those things negate a decent amount of things, including big explosive plays that you've had.
Yeah, and then next is Shaq Mason, 60.4. All right, I'd like to see that a little better, but he's had, I think most of us would acknowledge, an up and down start.
Yeah, and especially when you're getting blown by. Those are the things that when it's really tough. I understand guard is one of those positions where you don't have to be as rangy and everything, but you can't get blown by at that spot.
Exactly.
And so, those are the types of things that he needs to be better. And he had a few some penalties. I mean, you mentioned all this week. Mm-hmm. Everybody had a penalty, but he absolutely had some of those as well.
So Tyus Howard, 69. Juice Scruggs, 68.1. Laramie Tunsil, 64.8. Shaq, 60.4. Kenyon Green, 43.9.
Yeah, it's not. We're not seeing the progress and development that you were hoping. And this is when you start thinking, who do you turn to someone? Is there another Green that you need to put on the field at that point? Mm-hmm. It needs to start being, hey, Kendrick Green, maybe you need to get involved here, because that's unacceptable, right?
43.9.
And
he had a really good game in there.
Yeah, he had one really good game that is helping bring some of that up. Yeah. It has not been pretty for Kenyon Green thus far.
But then, kind of back to Kenyon Green real quick. At what point are you forced to make a tough decision with him? Or maybe it's not even going to be tough, at that point. Does he have another week? Does he have 2 weeks? Because we were asking this about Laramie Tunsil with the false starts and the penalties, which the false starts got better, but the penalties didn't.
No.
I mean, but he's paid a lot of money. He's a good pass blocker.
I think also the alternative is also a portion of part of this, right? Because I understand that it was the penalties is the reason why you were in such a start hard stance where it was like, no, just do it, because the point needs to be made. But if we're talking about the capability, the alternative always comes into account. And so I guess I want to see more Kendrick Green, and maybe I need to go back and look at the few snaps that Kendrick Green ultimately took when Kenyon Green stepped out. But it really does make you wonder. I mean, can Kenyon Green truly be worse than this? And I understand, right? The Kenyon Green is a young guy that you want to continue to get development. But at this point, it is negatively impacting what you're trying to do, particularly, the run game it falters in some ways because of this. There's some plays, as I was, just oddly decided to go back and look at all the run plays from this game against the Jaguars, and you can see him in faltering on his blocks, and how sometimes that is one of the key things that, messes up a play.
Yeah.
You can't have that.
You can't have that, and then this is where it really kind of piqued my interest in and that is when it comes to hurries and pressures. Because even though Laramie Tunsil, he's a good pass blocker. The penalties are a whole different category. But he's not going to get anybody hurt. Here's where it gets interesting. And I said this Monday as well. Tyus Howard, people were saying, he played better. He played pretty good. And I'm like, man, he sure did have C.J. Stroud running around a lot back there. Tyus Howard has given up 10 pressures and 8 hurries in the 4 games. That's where I'm like, he was a better pass blocker than this when he was playing tackle before. And it's just not, his grade is good. Not great, but his grade is good.
Yeah.
At 69. But you can't give up 10 pressures and 8 hurries when that's the franchise behind you, man. And he's running for his life on some of these, or at least extending plays. And maybe not running for his life, but having to extend plays because of the pressure coming in.
Yeah, and I think the compounding portion of this is the fact that all of them are together and not being all that great. And a line is only so good as its weakest part, and you want them all to be moving in tandem and all those things. But there's an acknowledgement that at times you can have, one part of a line kind of compensate in some ways for another.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the part of this line that compensates for another?
Yeah.
Right. You're having one next to another, next to another, having their various different problems and challenges. And I think that almost operates as a multiplier in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the big frustrations, because, I don't know what to do with in that instance. But Tyus Howard, you even anecdotally, right? Yeah. You mentioned that, and I can, it vividly flashes before my eyes quite a few plays where you could see CJ Stroud being pressured from that side, and that's when he's having to really, that's when he's showing
having
his
to step
acumen
up, having to
stepping
move
up and his micro adjustments and those that he's very good. But you would want those things to be significantly better there.
All right. There is a name I have not mentioned yet, and that would be Kenyon Green pressures and hurries.
Oh, no.
12 pressures, 9 hurries.
Yeah.
A 43.9 grade. You can't have both of them. You can't do that. You got to be good at something. You know? I know that takes into account the 43, but I'm saying also run blocking, et cetera. Like, it's in him somewhere. We've seen it this year. We've seen it in the past. It's in him. He just doesn't do it.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is the place where I wish I had more of an understanding of offensive line play just at its root to see, like, where do we start? Because I know that Chris Josser's name has come up a lot. And again, if you're a position coach, it's almost like an offensive line, right? Either we're talking about you for really good things or really bad things. And I imagine that Chris Josser has not enjoyed his name coming up so much in our world of sports talk radio. But I do wonder, like, is that something where we're seeing some level of development, or like he's working towards development and you're getting somewhere? Or is this something where you have to look at Chris Josser and say, are you capable of coaching up these guys?
Or maybe it's him.
It's Kenyon himself.
Yeah, maybe it's him. Because like I said, it's in him. We've seen a very good game. He had a really good game against the Colts.
There's so much about the Colts that almost feels like, and I know you hate this term in general, but where it feels like flush it for the bad, for the good. It seems like it is a anomaly in the data set in some ways, in the ways that we look at this, right? Like that kind of
D'Amico called him out by name in a good way.
Yeah.
Like after that Colts game.
And I mean, like in that moment, it's deservedly so. But ultimately, I don't want to say you're only as good, but it's a what have you done for me lately league.
Yeah.
And lately, you haven't seen any of that. So I get it, right? You've seen it in there and you want to continue to try and draw that out. But yeah, that is a good question. When do you shift? And I guess also, like, what can you get from Kendrick Green if he accepts
it also points to you got to do something great. You know, like Laremy Tunsil, at least he can pass block, you know. And I know we can maybe argue that, you know, in small, you know, get real particular about some of the things, but he can pass block. Juice Scruggs has shown improvement and been pretty consistent, second highest overall grade. Shaq Mason, people call him underrated, and he's not going to kill you, you know. So everybody, at least they do something.
They have a thing.
Like Kenyon Green right now, you have to be asking yourself, what does he do? Well, he's probably, I don't know this for sure. I know Laremy's the most penalized player on the line, on the team, but Kenyon Green's got to be up there. So he gets penalized a lot. His score overall as a blocker is 43.9. He's given up the most hurries and the most pressures, and he's been inconsistent. Where's the, well, you still got to play him moment, you know, thing?
Yeah.
Where's that?
And it might just be, what else do you have? Which, that's not a great answer, but it might be the answer that we're dealing with. All these things that you're pointing to. And I think I maybe mentioned this in passing with you off air at one point, but I do wonder, if you're having all of these troubles, is it possible that the scheme is not fitting what the players do on the offensive
I think
line?
So.
Right? The outside zone. Because I do know in watching some of the run plays from this Jags game yesterday, one of the things you see from time to time, and it's not the major issue. I want to make that abundantly clear. I don't believe this to be the major issue, but it was a thing that I noticed, is that you sometimes see with the zone, you know, with the one zone scheme, right, sometimes a responsibility is most dangerous player, right, in this situation. And you see them kind of scanning to figure out what that is at times. We can kind of see that gear turning.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make me wonder, what happens if you make the assignment more clear, as opposed to the zone situation where it's kind of a little read and react, and that requires another level of processing. And I don't say that to try and like imply that any of these guys are dumb or anything, but I think it's an additional level on top of just going and executing, right? Freeing yourself to go do that. And I understand it's part and parcel of kind of the offense that Bobby Slowick wants to run, but I do wonder if you end up in more of a gap scheme or something like that where the assignment is abundantly clear. Not to say that you don't have clear assignments at sometimes, but if that does help some of this offensive line, because is it possible that you're not just dealing with a whole group of bad linemen, maybe that it just does not fit what you have in-house?
And this is another thing I wish we didn't have to do every week, because we talked about it with Laremy Tunsil last week. I think it's appropriate this week as well, and it's certainly appropriate with Kenyon Green. Where's the line? Like, Laremy Tunsil had all those penalties, against the Vikings, had different kinds of penalties against the Jaguars, if he has more penalties this week, where's the line with him? And then even an easier decision, you know, Kenyon Green had that very impressive first game and then has been gradually falling off. Where's the line with him? It's clearly not. It's clearly closer than Laremy's. But Laremy, like if he has another week, last week they were talking about nothing but we got to clean it up. We got to clean it up. We got to clean it up. Texans can't beat the Texans. This week they're talking about cleaning it up, cleaning it up. Texans can't beat the Texans. There's got to be a point where you're like, man, we got to make a call here.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand. Maybe they have reached that point, but I think also as I mentioned earlier, the decision is at least that's a part of the decision making metrics. One of those decisions or one of those points being, okay, this has gone too far.
Yeah.
But a question that I know that you've asked is, well, then what do you do? And then if that answer is not sufficient, then it's like, well, it might have to be that we stick with this until we have a better answer to that secondary question.
Yeah.
And I appreciate this text in from the 832 said what we're missing is that Kenyon is a first-round pick. Bumping him off is a huge recommitment from him, so you're admitting that you whiffed. And I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but that's part of it.
It's part of it.
I'm sure that's part of it, so I do wonder if that's it. But, I mean, this is where it's tough to be someone that does not have the minutia of offensive line play. We can all kind of look at it and see what's inherently not good, which is what you're looking at right now.
Yeah.
The getting to the fixing it, I think, requires a different level of know-how, which also then comes back to, are you incorporating that level of know-how with your coaching staff to be able to fix it? Because ultimately, that's the big thing. If it gets fixed, we'll all be all right. Do you have the answers to fix it?
I think what the texter said there is relevant, but not necessarily in this case. Because if you don't have enough equity or at least confidence from people and, you know, things that you have already, you know, proved to make good decisions, then you might be then ego might come into play. But Nick Caserio has nothing to worry about. Like, you know, D'Amico Ryan has nothing to worry about. Like, ego comes into play with a general manager who whiffs on a first rounder and is already kind of on shaky ground. You know, Nick Caserio, it'll be a bad look. It's a bad look.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I say this.
And there's ego involved.
I say this very, this is close to home. And when I say this is, I like to be right. Let's say this. Yeah. I love to be right. And admitting that you're wrong, I try to be very good at that. But yeah. I understand that that's not an easy thing, even if you have nothing to lose in that moment.
Yeah.
But
I'm saying is there's no way in hell that some general managers would be able to pull the trigger on a Kenyon Green, because then it makes them even look. Sure. Worse, and they're sure. Already on shaky ground. That's not Nick Caserio.
Right.
There's like Doug Peterson couldn't do this. like there are coaches in the NFL, and that might be the extreme example, that couldn't say, you know what, got to make a move here, because then it would make them look bad. D'Amico Ryan's doesn't have to worry about that. So I'm saying there's enough more equity here, you know, for them to go ahead and make that call.
I appreciate that you guys are always trying to bring some levity to the situation. From 713, we are missing J.J. Watt.
There we go. Right tackle.
That's right.
Well, or left guard.
I was like, which place would you put him?
Left guard.
Yeah,
left
I think
guard.
Left guard. Yeah, left guard.
He
left
can
guard.
Do that.
Yeah, okay. Very good. J.J., if you're listening, go ahead and start working on your pass.
He does look like he's lost a little weight. We just saw him on.
Yeah, but just get him on that peanut butter diet. You know what I mean? Get him on the peanut butter sandwiches. There's a whole bunch of peanut butter sandwiches and milk. We can get him up to speed real quick.
Yeah.
I'm joking, of course. It's In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's about time to turn it over to my man Figgy Fig for the mixtape. What you got for us?
Man, so I tried some of Lopez chili yesterday, and I took his advice on not telling the wifey it was made with venison.
Oh, I love this.
I have the live audio of her reaction. Plus, Lopez used a common superstition yesterday when we heard the passing of John Amos that always confused me for some reason. I have a list of everyday superstitions we use, and I kind of want to go through them and break them all down.
Love it.
Sounds great. Mixtapes next.
The aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Figs in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yes, it is Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to everyone out there. And I got to give a special shout out to John Lopez. You hooked us up with some chili, man. It's you gave us some chili yesterday, me and Reggie, and you waited until lunchtime confessions to mention that this is a different type of chili. And I was, I got to be totally honest. I was a little shocked for a minute. I was kind of stuck. I'm like, all right. When you told us this was venison chili.
Yeah,
And I never had it before. And I was totally fine with it. I trust your cooking. I'm a big fan of your cooking. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And yeah. Also yesterday you told me to let my wife try it. But don't tell her it's venison in it.
Yeah, did you?
I did exactly that. So I went home.
It'll be good.
Yeah, I went home after the show. I showed her. I told her that John made some chili. She was super excited. She's a big fan of your cooking. And I want to say maybe about 15 minutes later, I warmed it up. I ain't warm her none up. So I just came over there with her and start eating the chili. And I'm like, hey, sweetie, you want to try it? She like, yeah. So she tried it, and this is how that whole conversation went. And mind you, I told her after the fact, after she was, I let her eat some bites, and then I told her what was in it.
Mm. Oh, look.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you like the chili?
Yeah.
So this chili is made with venison. You can't even tell though, right?
And there is a reason why you didn't tell me before I ate it.
He told me not to. It don't taste bad. You said it tastes good.
It did, but why the would you not tell me something like that? You motherfucker.
It tastes good though, so it don't even matter.
No, because they make some cat taste good. Don't make it, I don't want to eat it necessarily.
Hey. Come on, it's not cat.
It's not, but it's Bambi.
Oh, stop it. You want some more?
I'm okay.
But you like
it. No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, no, it was bad.
No, it wasn't.
So she
said, I'm okay. That's crazy.
So she was pretty upset that I didn't tell her ahead of time.
I guess. And she called you an MF.
Yeah, she called me about 3-4 of them. But at the end of it all, she did say it was pretty good. I don't know if she would go back to it, because with her, one thing about my wife, it's a mental game when it comes to food with her. She don't like seafood. She don't like fish. And the crazy thing is, she never even tried it, but it's just a mental thing. The smell.
She just decided that she don't like it.
Yeah, she don't want to try it. But
hey, man, venison is healthier, by far healthier. Buddy,
the person that responds like Fig's wife did, they not trying to hear about it being healthier. Nothing of the sort.
Yeah, it's a lot of healthy stuff that she probably don't want to try or even eat. But she at the end of it, she did say it was pretty good. It wasn't bad. But she was so upset. I had to cut some of this audio out because she was just staring at me like she wanted to throw the whole bowl in my face.
Yeah, look.
When she called it Bambi.
Yeah, when it comes to content creation and doing radio, you did a good job. When it comes to like relationship, I don't know if that was a good thing.
Yeah, that's the one.
I don't know if I would have.
Now she's on edge now, because every time we have a conversation, she's like, are you recording this?
Real dent in the trust there, for sure.
Yeah,
but we appreciate you serving the show that way.
You did well, man.
Yeah, I'm taking one for the team, man. I'm taking one for the team. But she did enjoy. I actually enjoyed it, man. That was my first time having venison chili. And it wasn't bad at all, but I think
it's going to win.
I hope so. I think it should win. I think it was good. I know. Only thing is, I wish it had some beans in it, because beans go in chili.
Oh, chili doesn't have beans.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But you know, I would leave that.
Don't look at me for a tiebreaker. I eat either one of those.
Hey, I would leave that debate for another day. It's Figgy Smith Staple on Sports Radio 610. And yesterday, we got the news about John Amos passing away. And later on, I want to say it was way after the show, I see he actually passed in August, which was a little bit strange. But you know what?
He pulled the MF Doom?
Yeah. So, yeah, I wish we could have got that news in August. I couldn't take all of these passings in 2 or 3 days, man. I wish we could spread it out a little bit, but yesterday, John Lopez brought up the death in threes. And everybody kind of know that superstition of, you know, when somebody passed away, it's like, oh, that's the third one.
Yeah.
I was always confused at that because I never understood the criteria of that. Like, are we talking about three celebrities? Are we talking about just three random people passing away?
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about a celebrity and your grandma and some random dude on the news passing away? Like, I never understood that death comes in threes type of thing. Can y'all explain that to me a little bit?
I think you're right on it, honestly. I don't think there's explanation necessary. I think it is what it suits the purpose, right? There's a level of confirmation bias in that because people want it to be true. So whatever works in order to be like, there's the three, right? Well, I found the meaning in the thing. So I recognize that being the case, even though I'll say that still regardless.
I think it kind of fits, like if one of your relatives dies, then another one, you're waiting for the third.
If
a celebrity dies, then another one, you're waiting for a third celebrity. I think it's like what you're saying. It fits whatever the narrative is in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never understood that, but we usually say that pretty often. And I got a list of random superstitions we always use in our daily lives. And I'm going to go through. I want to see if y'all use these. And I think all of us use this one. Knocking on wood. Knock on wood. We do that. A lot of people do that all the time just in conversation.
I have a weird thing with the knock on wood superstition. I'm not I always say that, but then I have some that I'm not a very superstitious person.
Mm-hmm.
When I say knock on wood, I actually don't knock.
Yeah.
I just say it.
That's from being on radio, ain't it?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's from being on radio where you're like, I don't know if I actually have something to knock on particularly.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I could say sincerely, that was never something I actually did. It's something that I say because other people say it.
Yeah.
I am trying to get across this feeling that I know other people feel, and so I will say it, but I don't actually do it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a entertaining part in the conversation where it's just like, oh, knock on wood. So I don't think people really take it too serious. But what about these? This is one. I probably did this as a kid, but people avoiding stepping on cracks on sidewalks.
That's right,
because
you break your mother back. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and one. I love my mother personally.
Yeah.
You avoid cracks?
I love my mother, and she needs her back. You know what I mean?
You avoid them.
So I don't want her to have a backyotomy, so I do avoid
them. So the one I used to say, or we used to say as a kid, step on the crack, your mama smoked crack. So I would try to avoid those.
That's
one in the sticks. That's one from the ghetto.
I don't do that. I don't subscribe to that one.
That's one from the ghetto. But I guess the belief in that one is I guess it could bring bad luck. So a lot of these just bring bad luck. Another one is black cats crossing your path. That's a superstition where I guess it could bring bad luck. In some other cultures, it brings good luck.
Yeah, that's another one. Doesn't matter to me. You can cross. I walk under ladders, too. I don't know if you're getting to that one or not. I don't care about ladders. I don't care about black cats. There's some things I do, though.
Yeah, the thing about the walking under ladders is just why do people have so many opportunities to walk under the ladder?
It's very rare, right?
Like, I feel like most of the time, walking under the ladder is the least comfortable way to go about this. I will just circumnavigate that ladder.
It's inconvenient.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what about this one, opening an umbrella indoors? Because a lot of the people feel like that brings bad luck as well.
Yeah, I'll open an umbrella wherever I damn well please. Although, to be honest, I don't be opening umbrellas that much. I keep one in the car, and most of the time I'm like, I'm just going right there. I'm just going to hoof it. You know, I'm just going to run through the rain right quick. I might get a little, you know, wet from the rain, and it's cool.
I don't. And I don't think it's necessarily because of superstition. It's just you got to get through the door. You know, you open a big umbrella, you still got to get through the door. Open it outside.
Or are you one of those guys that carries around the golf umbrella?
I've got one in the truck that's a little bigger. It's not that size, but yeah, it's a little bigger. Yeah.
What about this one? Breaking the mirror.
Do guys do umbrellas? I feel like a lot of guys are just like, I'd rather not umbrella.
I don't do umbrella a lot.
I ain't going to lie. Whenever I see a fella with an umbrella, I kind of judge a little bit. Unless you with your old lady and it's hers.
Or on a date or something.
And you kind of jump up under the umbrella too. But if you just by yourself, I'm like, dog, you just going to the convenience store, man.
You gotta be a gentleman, man.
Yeah, unless you, I ain't gonna judge if you catching a bus or something like that. But if you just jumping out the car to go in the store, Like, dog, yeah. Put that umbrella back. Like,
I don't. I have one in the truck, but only for like really rainy days.
Like, put a hood on like a real man. But what about this one? Breaking the mirror brings you 7 years bad luck.
Who's counting? That's the one thing I've always like. So in 6 years, you're gonna be like, I got one more year left because mm-hmm. I broke a mirror in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
What's going on?
No, I don't.
I don't subscribe to that one either.
I also very rarely break mirrors. I want to make that abundantly clear. Like, there's just not a lot of instances where I'm mirror breaking. Yeah. Nope, doesn't happen.
Or when if like a movers, I'll be going through this in a minute. When if a movers, some of your movers break a mirror? Like, do that count for you or? Is it bad luck for the movers?
That's on them, isn't it?
Is the liability of the broken mirror on the owner or on the actual actor who broke the mirror? That's a great point. Let's go to the superstition court of appeals and figure out what's happening there.
Let's look in the rule book of superstitions. what about this one? Spilling salt. Because a lot of people say...
That's one I always do.
If you spill salt...
over your shoulder?
Yep. That is ridiculous, man.
I do it all the time. All the time.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
That is ridiculous. This one I didn't know this was one right here. Whistling indoors. So I guess some coaches, whistling inside is thought to be bad fortune. As it could whistle away your wealth.
I never even heard of that one.
Yeah, I didn't either, man. I used to be a whistling mofo. I used to always whistle. I was Andy Griffin with the whistling, man.
All right, we've got people weighing in. They're saying that if the movers break it, that's on the movers.
Yeah, man.
As it should.
Oh, wow. I don't. Like, maybe Lopez, this give you some level of belief. 713 said their son broke a mirror and he's in prison. I don't know.
I got to be careful.
We are establishing data.
Yeah, I got to be careful with these mirrors then.
Yeah, man.
Here's another
handle
one.
With care.
Here's another one. The itchy palms. So if your right palm itches, it means you have some money coming soon.
Yeah,
if your left one itches, you'll lose money. That's one. My aunties used to go by that a long time ago. I never understood that.
I never stood the never even heard of the right left thing. I always thought if your palms itch, you're just going to get money. Doesn't matter which palm.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I hadn't. Yeah. But also, I'm trying to think about the last time my palms itched. Like that's just not a sensation that I don't even think I've had.
I don't know, but you banked after that.
Okay.
What about this one? Birds inside the house. If a bird flies into your house, you're gonna see bad omen and potentially illness or death. That sounds like some witchcraft type stuff right there.
That's exactly what that is. There's superstition and then there's crazy witchcraft. That sounds like crazy witchcraft.
Oh, okay.
Another one, cutting nails or hair at night. So some cultures believe that cutting your nails or hair after dark invites bad spirits.
This is a dark list.
I know, man.
y'all be remembering all these rules? This is so many rules.
Yeah. The nails thing.
Just imagine somebody punch you in. Hey, don't be cutting no nails at night. You bring your bad luck in here. What are you, like, crazy? What's wrong with you?
Are you insane?
You say, yeah, so you said cutting hair as well, so I can't get myself a touch-up of the night before or something?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
What about this one? Never giving the knife as a gift. So giving the knife as a gift is said to be sever the relationship, so people often include a penny or a coin for the receiver to pay for it.
Man, you're talking to my aunts and my mom, and that's a big thing in the Hispanic culture.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've never heard this.
Especially at weddings, like if you get a knife set, you have to give the person that gave you the knives a penny or a nickel or
whatever.
So
it's like you pay for it.
You're purchasing it, you know, because if they give it to you and you don't purchase it, then it's going to sever the relationship or your marriage or whatever. A lot of times it's a marriage thing, you know, because people get that type of stuff.
Sure.
When they get, this is generational in my house.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, more power to y'all. I feel like I've established I've got a little lazy to me. I'm not thinking of all them rules. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah, this one right here, I'm going to run through it real quick. This one right here, lucky number 13. That we kind of know about the number 13. People kind of scared of the number 13.
It wasn't a big thing to me until Apollo 13. Once Apollo 13 hit, I went, all right.
Yeah, I did notice, right, like,
bad.
I know a lot of apartment buildings or some buildings skip the number floor 13, so they go from 12 to 14. Some roads.
But if you're on 14, you know where you are.
I always thought that was weird. But putting shoes on the table is considered bad luck, perhaps associated with death and mourning in some cultures.
What about underwear?
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Last one is tucking your thumb in while passing the graveyard. So I guess that's a big...
Never heard of it.
That's a big thing in Japan. People tuck their thumbs into their fists when passing the graveyard to protect their parents from death.
You ever heard of that one?
I never heard of that one.
Buddy, I stopped hearing about these about 3-4 of them ago, if we're completely honest.
Yeah. That's all I got, man. Some weird superstitions that I really don't go by.
Very good. All right. Figgy's Mixtape, 1:20 p.m. every weekday right here. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you, my man. And coming up next, the baseball game has started. We are in the bottom of the first, and we'll get ready to hand off to the drive. We'll do all that next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, Reginald Atitula on a Wednesday, having a good time as we are, not going to lie, fairly distracted by a must-win.
It is a must-win.
Astros AL wild card game, game two versus the Tigers. Nothing to nothing in the top of the second. This is where the damage got done yesterday. But Hunter Brown looked like he's had some pretty smooth sailing this far. Only threw 12 pitches in the first inning of this. And unfortunately, you did not get a chance to really get after Holton.
Yeah.
And his day is probably done already. He gets through his first three, handles his business, retiring Altuve, Tucker, and Alvarez. But just early on, and look, it might be too early to even get a response on this, but I mean, what's your confidence level just seeing with the way that the Astros have come out at the start of this one? Hunter Brown dealing with his responsibility well thus far, and then seeing them go down 1-2-3 in the
first. First three innings to me are going to be huge. The first inning plus, we're into the second inning. You couldn't ask for more. Knock on wood. See what I did there, Figgy? Because he didn't throw a lot of pitches, he being Hunter Brown.
Who was that? Not, was that Figgy knocking?
That was me.
Appreciate you doing that. Thank you, sir.
He didn't throw a lot of pitches. And then even though you didn't get to Holton, you're fine. You just want to be behind early against this team. And I think the biggest reason for that is they're showing it right now. They got guys in that bullpen that can just go batter to batter if they need to, you know, if just to get those outs.
So, okay. We saw earlier Adam Spolane, obviously all on top of this, he mentioned that Yusei has a glove in his hand, went to the bullpen, you know, played catch, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel good about the idea of maybe Yusei Kikuchi going at some point in this one?
I actually do. I mean, you can't save him for spring training if you don't win today.
Right.
You know, so I actually do. I think they're both going to be mixing and matching. The old, like A.J. Hinch said, chaos. Chaos pitching. But through the second inning, two high fastballs to go strikeout here to start the second for Hunter Brown. So Hunter Brown is in a good place. Just a matter of don't fall behind in the first three innings because then it will be really, really tough.
Yeah, I mean, just give him a little bit of something because as of right now, he's cooking. Three strikeouts and facing five batters, man.
Yeah, high cheese. I just broke a bat, too.
I'm feeling good, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Brown going, looking good. Man, they got to score runs, though, man. Like, it just has to happen early. It'd be the most frustrating way to end this season if you just have great pitching and you lose with, like, one or two runs for the Tigers because you just couldn't score runs. Like, that would be a real frustrating thing, especially with all the things that are hinging on this particular game. Could this be Alex Bregman's final game as an Astro? Obviously Justin Verlander within the course of this, and then on top of the other all of the other kind of a narrative type things that are happening within this one, you got to handle your business.
You've got to. And look, we know from the wild season that was that they have been prone early on the season to not have the starting pitching. Then it came in And then they were prone to go long stretches without the offense doing its part. You can't have that. that's a non-negotiable for the offense to go dormant.
Yeah, so that's what we're watching as we continue throughout this through this one. Man, I'm still hopeful, man. And obviously, seeing Hunter get out here look good, I think that we'll be back tomorrow talking about a game three for this one. And although if you say goes, you think you feel good about maybe Aaron Geddy possibly starting?
It's going to have to be,
right? It has to be him, right? Mm-hmm. There's no really other option in that instance.
But
there?
Then it's Aaron Geddy for until his first sign of trouble. You know, then you empty the bullpen.
Yeah.
So Hunter Brown is looking very, very sharp. Very much a huge game for his career. Very much a huge game, obviously, for this season. But he's coming out and doing what we were hoping. Well, yeah. What we were hoping that Fromber would do yesterday. But he's throwing that high heat and getting guys out, although there is now one official base hit.
That's wild. That's wild, because I thought that one might have been handled. But, yeah, two outs. Don't want to see a rally. Hope that gets put away. But, no, I really love and feel confident, more confident, because Hunter Brown comes in as relatively inexperienced. But clearly he has the stuff. He has the he has the metal to be that kind of guy. But you kind of need to see it in the postseason, because postseason pitching is just different. You don't have to go very far to, you know, illustrate that point. Obviously, Fromber is a guy that you look at, where regular season, it looks like one thing. And you get to the postseason, and the pressures that exist within that kind of shift the dynamic of what you're doing there.
Yeah.
I'm really encouraged. I love the idea that you got Hunter Brown out here looking really good thus far, and hopefully AW does indeed come. Plus, I quadruple down here, and maybe this is not the way to go. The Tigers did not look dangerous yesterday for the most part. To capture a little bit of what D'Amico Ryan has talked about with this Texas team, it felt like the Astros hurting the Astros yesterday.
Hey, but Scooble did.
Scooble.
I was in the building, and Scooble doggone sure did look dangerous.
Yeah, that's Scooble.
Yeah, and that's Scooble, and they obviously don't have a Scooble on the mound. I think that the closest thing to Scooble in this series actually is Hunter Brown. I know he's a righty, Scooble's a lefty, but Hunter Brown is the closest thing to a pitcher of that caliber. So to me, that should be advantage Astros, and knock on wood, early on, if his defense can bail him out just a little bit, give him a little bit of help, you should be in a good spot with Hunter Brown on the mound.
Clint looking good, buddy.
Sharp, hey, man. Cleans up nice, that old dirty room.
I don't know if y'all heard, there's a little event going on downstairs, man. You can't come in that thing half-stepping now.
Okay. You were just showing up because they put a documentary about your boy up. I thought it was.
I mean, it's a good day to go ahead and put a little sport coat, a little casual sport coat on after they're dropping docs and stuff, man. Look here. You got that mixed crew down there, that new mixed crew we got that down there. All the Odyssey stations are down there. That new mixed crew coming in town, they're the real deal. And they're dressed to the nines, and then you always got Cindy down there with Mega Man. You better can't come in here half.
That's a good point.
Look here now, and Pendergast, he got that head shaved, just nice and clean and
excellent.
Shining.
Very good, very good.
Seth got a polo tucked in. I mean, he looks like he tucked played quarterback right now. He's lean and mean, boy. That bull crew got all of them got a hat on.
Yeah,
come on, man.
And see, I knew I wasn't doing any of that. That's why I rushed up here. I found that elevator real quick. I put on a collared shirt and tried to blend in and get up here as soon as I could.
I wore a T-shirt. I might look crazy today.
Nah, it looks good.
There's Sean got a little T-shirt on, man. Sean gets away with it, you'll be all right.
All right, no problem. I do want to circle back, though. B-Sky, you were out there. What was your kind of impression of just the vibes of it all when it came to this wild card game, game one yesterday?
Yeah, so you could look at it two ways, that Fromber Valdez and the performance that he gave you, only giving up three technically, gave you a chance to win, but out of context, within context, that doesn't work, because you were going against the Cy Young winner.
Mm-hmm.
So you needed your guy to give you a chance to win early. Like you could not be down early against a pitcher of Scooble's caliber.
Right.
So to me, that was the main issue, is that Fromber Valdez overall gave you a chance to win, but early on was missing with this, or was, you know, actually up in the zone with the sinker.
Yeah.
Walked a couple of guys. And I've always said this about Fromber, that the walks, even though a lot of times he'll bail himself out with the double play because he's a ground ball pitcher and he's a really good one, that the walks eventually do catch up to you, and you get too much of that in times when you don't need it with Fromber.
For sure.
For sure. Let me ask you guys.
And obviously you need to hit, and they didn't.
Real quick before we hand it off, because I this was one of my confessions, Clint. Look, as much as Dusty did a hell of a job, you know, won the World Series, I miss A.J. Hinch. Just watching him yesterday, I just miss him. I just do.
A.J.'s smooth with it. I mean, there's no doubt he's smooth with it, and he's doing with this crew similarly what he did in 2015 with the Astros. And
yeah,
they're talking about it right now on the broadcast, man, about how just like kind of getting a peek pregame inside his head and how he works and how he operates. And so, yeah, man, I mean, he's a good one. He's a good one. I'd like for him to watch the Astros the rest
of
the way.
You're darn right.
He can sit his ass up there in the woodlands and watch these Astros the rest of the way. That'd be nice.
Yeah, the whole thing of the reason why he's gone, it just all of it feels icky and unfair. Yeah. So, really, for me, it's more of just a reminder of how odd that time was and that whole era of that is.
Maybe that's part of it.
It doesn't. His departure doesn't quite feel right.
Yeah.
Even though I think it's worked out just fine. I mean, I think they were fine with Dusty. I think they're fine with Joe Espada now. So I don't miss him as much, but I do reflect on it kind of, I would say, not fondly.
Well, you guys enjoy. Have a fantastic show. Make sure that H gets painted on nicely on that field, man.
Hey, it is looking nice in here, man.
Other than that football product that we watched last year, that since I've been covering the team, this is the best off the field job that they've done.
Yeah,
with anything, yeah. And they do a pretty damn good job with their events and all the, you know, things we get to be a part of. But Houston, you're gonna be proud of this one.
Yeah, and I know you guys are gonna talk about how they can make us proud on the field on Sunday with the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
So you're listening to KLT HD2 and Odyssey Sports Station, and right now, The Drive is live.